welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Jacqueline Winspear's Maisie Dobbs mysteries have been called by USA Today less whodunits than whydunits, more P.D. James than Agatha Christie. The books are set in Between the Wars England, a time currently in the spotlight given the success of the Downton Abbey TV series on PBS. Winspear's ninth Maisie Dobbs mystery is Elegy for Eddie, which tells the story of kind and gentle Eddie Pettit, a horse whisperer who meets a violent death. It's a great pleasure to welcome Jacqueline Winspear to The Book Show this week.
Well, thank you very much indeed. It's my pleasure to be here.
This is the ninth installment in the Maisie Dobbs series, and a series that is fascinating because of when it takes place, of Between the Wars. What brought you to that time period?
Really, what brought me to the time period was my curiosity and interest in actually the Great War, in particular from childhood. My grandfather was severely wounded in the Great War at the Battle of the Somme. He was shell-shocked, gassed, and had these horrible leg injuries. And I guess as a child, observing an elderly man dealing with injuries from a battle, you know, many, many, many years earlier when he was in his youth, really inspired me to think, you know, what is it like to go to war? But more importantly, you know, when do wars end? And seeing, if you will, the battle within the man as he struggled with his breathing, you know, his lungs, and with his the fact that he didn't like loud noises around him, and so on and so forth. And that sort of childhood curiosity then began to expand as I looked into the era more following the war. And I began being interested in everything from sort of the politics of the time, more especially to how people lived and how they thought and how they dealt with some very challenging social situations that came as a result of that war. And, you know, right down to the clothes people wore. It throws a light on the times, how people dress.
When you first started out, what was it that you wanted readers to know about that period? Was there something that you wanted to educate them about?
I don't know that I wanted to educate people per se, although, I think I harbor a desire to have once been a history teacher, but I don't think I wanted to educate people. But I think the group that I have always been, or the constituency that I've always been incredibly inspired by, are the women of that generation in Britain, the women whose lives were dramatically changed by the Great War. And, you know, when I was a kid, you know, I knew some of them. They lived on my street. They were, at that point, women of a certain age. You know, they were getting on. But they were all miss this, miss that, and so on. Not married, because a generation of men had lost their lives on the battlefield. So, for example, in 1921, you probably only stood a 1 in 10 chance of getting married if you were a woman of marriageable age. But I remember these women of being women of such spirit and fortitude, women who were sort of pillars of the community in their way, and yet so, you know, independent and yet very compassionate. And in creating the character of Maisie Dobbs, I wanted to imbue her with something of the spirit of that generation. I sort of wanted to do right by them, to use that language. I wanted to do right by them. And I'm completely inspired by that generation of women, because they absolutely blazed a trail in Britain, very much so, quite frankly, because, you know, they outnumbered men of their age group. And they were able to achieve an awful lot rather than just sort of sitting down and accepting their lot.
When you sat down to create this character and to bring this character to life, was it always the intention to have it be a serious character?
That's a very good question, because in fact, I didn't actually sit down and think, well, I want to write a novel and I think I'd like to write it about this subject. Before writing that, like most writers, I had a day job, but I was also writing nonfiction, articles, essays, so on and so forth. I didn't have an intention to write a novel because, I didn't think I could make up a story. But Maisie Dobbs, to say she came to me, it sounds a bit airy-fairy, but literally I was driving along and in my imagination this woman walked into my life as a fully formed character. And by the time I got to work that day And I confess to being a bit of a daydreamer when I'm stuck at a stoplight, so that's probably why it happened. But I had this story in my head that I couldn't wait to write. Now, here's where it became a series, and that is as I was writing Maisie Dobbs, as I created the character and as she revealed herself to me, there were scenes, pieces of dialogue, ideas coming to me that I thought, you know, this is not part of this story. This is part of something else. And I was writing them, these pieces, and then just putting them in a file on my desktop, on my computer, marked fragments. So when I got to the end of the first novel, Maisie Dobbs, I went to that fragments box, so to speak, and it was sort of rather like going into the a trunk in the attic. And I pulled out those fragments and I thought, oh my gosh, I've got a series here. And I knew that even in a paragraph, in a few lines of dialogue, I had probably at least another five or six novels.
So many of the novels have been so deeply concerned with the lingering after effects of war. Was that part of those fragments in the sense of that this was something that you wanted to explore and explore through the eyes of this character?
I think in a way there's two answers to that. Yes, I did, but it also came very organically. I have a character who, from very lowly beginnings, has an extraordinary opportunity for education because of the people that she was employed by. But she gives up that opportunity to become a battlefield nurse in the war that became known as the Great War. And she actually did what lots of young people did at that point. She lied about her age. That was not an unusual phenomenon. She saw death of a most terrible kind at an impressionable age, and she was herself wounded. She suffered what we would today call PTSD. Now, when you've got a character like that, it doesn't go away in one book. It doesn't go away after the event. She has this residue within her, which, you know, her friend Priscilla, who also went to war as an ambulance driver, refers to as the dragon. It's the dragon that you keep down inside you, that you have to keep mollified, otherwise it will roar. And I think I was inspired to have that as part of her character, and although, as I say, it did come quite organically, was knowing my grandfather. The fact that, you know, he liked quiet and calm around him. You didn't want to make any loud noises. He found that quite distressing. And he always had pain in his legs, for example. And you could always hear that rasping breathing, you know, from the gas damage to his lungs, you know, where he couldn't always catch his breath. And I think that started me to say, you know, thinking to myself, you know, when does it end for people that have been to war? When does it end? And for their families. And of course, you know, a war has we read history books and you read, okay, this war went from 1914 to 1918. Oh, and that war went from 1939 to 1945. And there's a war there that went from, you know, 1991 until, say, the beginning of 1991 to the end of 1991. But it doesn't end there for the people that suffer. And so there is that lingering, if you will, suffering within Maisie, and she's coming to, you know, her struggle is to come to terms with it. I think it was my second novel, Birds of a Feather, one of the characters, Lady Rowan, says, you know, that's the trouble with war. It's never over when it's over. It lives on inside the living.
Once you adopt that, and once you take on this character, in some way, aren't you living that as well?
That's a really good question. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. And there have been a couple of scenes that I've written in my time with this series that have actually impacted me quite deeply. You know, at the end of the day, I'm writing a book, and it has books that have quite a broad readership in terms of age and so on and so forth. But there are some scenes that I know that I've written that have just made me ache. And, you know, maybe I haven't been able to write any more that day because I've just had to go and sit with it. And I'll give you an example. In Pardonable Lies, which is the third novel in the series, Maisie Dobbs, the main character, the case takes her back to France. And she revisits the area where she was wounded when the casualty clearing station where she was working came under enemy fire. I actually went to France to visit the battlefields of the Somme and Ypres, and I came across a casualty clearing station cemetery. And it was actually fortuitous in a way, because it was just as I described it in this scene when Maisie goes back. But as I was standing there with the rain slanting across the countryside, cold in spring, and looking at the markers of the men and women who died there, my question was, how would I feel if? How would I feel if I was coming back to this place where I had seen death of a most terrible kind, where I myself had been wounded and indeed lost the love of my life? How would I feel if? And that's a question I think writers ask themselves a lot, to put themselves into the scene. And then when I wrote that scene where Maisie Dobbs, basically she has a breakdown, I had to stop working and I just had to go and remind myself that I was in California. It was a sunny day and I could sit out on my deck and there was peace in my world. So yes, you do get impacted.
with that said, though, is there an understanding, at least whether it's conscious or unconscious or immediate, an understanding that by doing that and by having this character break down, that you have forever changed that character and forever changed really the whole tenor of the series?
You know, there is a sense of doing that, but part of what is compelling for me is to, I wouldn't say to upset the apple cart, but to just say, you know, who are you now that this is happening to you? And you see, one of the compelling things for me as a writer with a serious character, someone with a certain set of experiences that have been actually very, very difficult and that have marked her character, who is she as she moves through time? And how is she impacted not only by the case at hand, and how does she work with that case being who she is? How does she interact with the people around her during that time? And how does she respond to the events of her day? And for example, we all respond to the events of our day. We go about our daily round, we go to work, we, you know, go get a cup of coffee, we do this, that and the other. But we know that, for example, this is happening, this event is happening in the world. And it, we talk about it, we think about it, and it, the little shifts go on because of that. And if we look at what is happening in the world today, there's just been a tragedy in France. I was listening to the news about that, the updates on it, the radio as I was coming to be interviewed, and you're just thinking, gosh, what does that mean? What does that mean, that kind of tragedy where people have been killed in this disaster? And you know, I think going back to the question, it's she has on her shoulders what we all have on our shoulders, which is our past as well as our present. And I want to see as a writer, plus she also has her all-important case, and I want to see who is she as she moves through that. And around that, you know, create, I hope, a compelling story.
Jacqueline Winspear is the author of the new novel, Elegy for Eddie. It is just out, the ninth installment in the Maisie Dobbs series. This story opens in 1933, so this is a story that is really going on chronologically. Are there specific times and points that you want to bring this character to?
I would say so, but... Well, let me weigh that up. Yes, indeed, but that's a really interesting era anyway. And I'm just as interested in, you know, the smaller things that go on as well as the bigger things. You know, what's happening in the rest of the world, and how was news taken by people? I mean, 1933 was a very interesting time, a tragic time. And it's interesting to note, you know, there was... effectively a man-made disaster in America, which was the Dust Bowl crisis in 1933. Prohibition had been lifted. You had a horrendous earthquake in Japan. This all sounds awfully familiar, doesn't it? Mm. And, you know, that's, and then there are other things that politically on the sports front, you know, there was the very controversial bodyline bowling in Britain, which was a big thing in 1933. It was the whole question of sportsmanship was, you know, what constituted sportsmanship was really under the microscope. And then there was the dictatorship, the rise of the dictatorship of Adolf Hitler in Germany. And, you know, that was well reported in the papers, and there were certain newspapers that really picked up on it, whereas others played it down. It depended where their, let's say, the sensibilities of their readership.
In looking at that time period and the characters, the again, the family comes into this because there is the relationship that the connection with Maisie's father that comes into this story that makes it very personal for her. And I guess the question is for us, for it to resonate with us and for it to become personal, do you need that personal connection with the central character?
I think there has to be some sort of personal connection. And to use that word again, in a way it happens organically for me because as a writer I have to have some sort of personal connection with her. And I want to know what's happening to her personally. And this story, of course, does come out through, you know, her father's former workmates, so to speak, and it's a story of a, if you will, a simple man. But then we take it into the world stage, if you will. And for me, and the story that inspired this was actually a story, an absolutely true story told to me by my father of a young man that he knew when he was a boy. And for me, looking at that story, it is that, you know, that what, how that man in a way stood for the innocence of so many people at the time, the innocence. And especially if you look at some of the bigger things that are going on in the country and indeed the world.
Eddie is a man who is kind and gentle, considered slow by some, but certainly is gifted with this ability to calm horses, a horse whisperer, if you will. And as you said, a story that you heard from your father. In looking into that ability, what was it that intrigued you of being able to really have control over a violence that an animal would have internally?
You know, I think the thing that really touched me was my father's telling of the story, to be perfectly honest. My father loves horses. I absolutely adore horses. My grandfather had horses. He worked with horses. And in the day when, you know, everybody that worked, you know, and for example, almost everybody had a horse. But when my father told me this story of a young man who had been born in the brewery stables to an unwed mother, 16 years of age, who was desperate not to lose her job. She was the nighttime cleaner at the brewery stables. And the brewers actually really looked after their horses. Horses, you know, you needed your horses to get the beer out. And the breweries had the money to really look after their horses. She was the nighttime cleaner, had become pregnant, and hid her pregnancy. And she was at work when she gave birth to the boy, literally in a horse's stable. And there was some suggestion that she had tried to muffle his sounds. And in doing so, there had been perhaps a lack of oxygen to the brain or whatever. But there was this suggestion. But in any way, he was considered slow. But because she always took him to work with her, he was always around horses. And the fact that this man had the gift, and when my father explained it, he said, literally, anyone had trouble with a horse, they'd call for him. And I've called him Eddie. They would call for him. And he had some very important, if you will, clients. And it was very, you know, ad hoc, and he did other odd jobs. And so you had this man that was had this innocence about him, that was able to communicate with horses. And as my dad said to me, you know, because, you know, horses are very much of the moment, And he was of the moment. He didn't think about what had just gone on because he couldn't keep that in his head, and he certainly didn't worry about what came next. So he was, when he was with a horse, he was absolutely with a horse and had a gentleness and a real way about him. And of course, the writer in me really pricked up her ears when my father told me he died in very suspicious circumstances, and everybody always wondered why. So as a writer, I had to fill in the gap of why. But for me, I've always been interested and somewhat awed by people that have that ultimate affinity with animals, and indeed with people. You know, there are people that can talk to anybody and be with anybody, and they open up and they bloom. But to do that with, you know, an animal that weighs, and in those days we're talking about, you know, cart horses probably, 1,200, 1,500 pounds and more, and just have the trust to go in with a horse that is raging with pain to be able to doctor him, I think that takes such a trust and a degree of innocence and trust. That fascinated me.
I find it fascinating that it was your father's telling of that story that drew you in. And I've heard you say that much of your writing about Maisie has come from stories that have been passed down in your family. You take that, as you talk about your history teacher background, but of looking at those moments and really meditating on them.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think family stories are really, they're so rich. And one of the things that's very gratifying for me is, and I get a lot of emails like this, that, oh, your story, I read A Lesson in Secrets, I read An Incomplete Revenge or whatever book, and people will say, and it made me go back and read the letters that I've never read that were from my grandmother. It made me go back and talk to my grandfather. And I found out that, you know, and so people who've been inspired to learn about their family's stories, because that's when I think the personal really intersects with almost the global, if you will. When people from small towns and villages find letters, postcards or whatever, and it's when granddad went to war from the little village in Iowa and went to France, and it first and only ever experienced beyond that village, that little small town. That is really interesting. And that's, you know, when I was talking about history, when I was a kid at school, you know, I can't say I was ever really engaged when the teacher started going on about dates and this law and that law. And, you know, when it became very much almost, when it had no colour to it. But, for example, if you told me that Queen Elizabeth I had black teeth because they were rotten, that was interesting to me, you know. What is it? How is life for ordinary people? And how did people live then? And how are we, going back to the stories, the people's stories, how are we connected to the past? And how, I think a lot of people are really engaged with that, because, I mean, look at the number of TV shows there are on, you know, delving into your past, finding out who you are connected with. And it's this connection to what has gone before. It's very compelling. And, you know, my dad's a good storyteller. He and my mother could keep you really well entertained.
Jacqueline Winspear is the author of Elegy for Eddie. It is a Maisie Dobbs novel. It is out from Harper. Jacqueline Winspear, a great pleasure. I thank you so much for spending time with us on The Book Show.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Again, Elegy for Eddie by Jacqueline Winspear is published by Harper. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. And you can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.